I've spent the past 7 years traveling the world perfecting my craft. You see, I'm something of a magician, inventor, and chocolate maker. So quiet up and listen down. Nope, scratch that, reverse it.
Mr. Wonka, I can see you're a man of great ingenuity.
What are you doing?
I'm making chocolate, of course. How do you like it? Dark, white, nutty, absolutely insane.
Many people have come here to sell chocolate. They've all been crushed by the chocolate cartel. You can't get a shop without selling chocolate, and you can't sell chocolate without a shop.
No daydreaming.
What are we gonna do, Willy?
Huh?
A double huh.
Do you have a pencil and paper?
Uh-huh.
I got an idea. I know things haven't been easy for you. They're gonna get better.
You promise?
I pinky promise. That's the most solemn vow there is.
Where do we start?
A good chocolate chip is simple.
Where's this?
It's just weird.
What's happening? Oh, that's a chocolate that makes it fly.
Well, let's find out, shall we?
Who's for a hoverjob?
Nothing to see here. Just a small group of people defying the laws of gravity.
Ladies and gentlemen of the Gallery Gourmet, my name is Willy Wonka.
He's good. Too good.
Pretty sure I've gained about 150 pounds in the last 2 weeks.
You could change her life, Mr. Wonka. Change all their lives.
Run away!
Every good thing in this world started with a dream. So you hold on to yours.
Hello, and welcome to the Movie Robcast. I'm your host, Rob Wallace, and as always, I'm truly delighted to be joined by my co-host, Mr. Rob Daniel.
And as always, it is a real pleasure to be here.
And what are we discussing in today's episode?
So today we have a chocolatey treat in the form of Wonka. So that is the film we're going to be looking at today.
Yes, Wonka being the prequel to Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. Specifically, the Gene Wilder Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Which, of course, was called Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
Yes, of course, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, of course, being a very different film from 2005, which we won't discuss in detail.
And also the name of the original source children's book written by Roald Dahl that was called Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, and Roald Dahl was not a fan of the Gene Wilder version. He did not like what they'd done with the book.
Which is odd. It's quite dark, which you'd think he'd be in favour of.
Absolutely. I don't know why he didn't like it, but Gene Wilder was so great as Willy Wonka. But yeah, that one was 1971, and as the poster at the time said, it's scrumdiddlyumptious. So, we will give a brief plot synopsis of Wonka, and then we will see if it's scrumdiddlyumptious too.
Yes, Rob, you have to do the plot synopsis in the style of an Oompa Loompa song.
While that would be amazing, I think it might have required a little bit of pre-planning, so the audience don't die of embarrassment.
Do you think Oompa Loompas prepare their songs, or do you think they just have an innate ability?
Well, I thought that they were pre-planned from the original movie. But in this movie, Hugh Grant, who of course plays the Oompa Loompa, that's in the trailer, just seems to come out with it. So I think now I have to revise my theory that these were all pre-planned song and dance numbers by the Oompa Loompas, and that they do just have this innate ability to come up with pretty catchy songs on the spot.
I mean, yeah, it's, you know, just, I'll say Oompa Loompa dibbity doo, and then you just start reading the synopsis.
Yes, that sounds like a nice middle ground.
Oompa Loompa doobity-doo.
With dreams of opening a shop in a city renowned for its chocolate, a young and poor Willy Wonka discovers that the industry is run by a cartel of greedy chocolatiers.
Like the Oompa Loompas doobity-doo.
Nailed it. So, yes, this, of course, because you will have all seen the trailers for this one, because heavens, this has been trailed heavily. Aquaman might do something, but this is the big film for Christmas. So it is, as Rob said, the prequel to Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, the 2005, was six film, Tim Burton, but more specifically Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, the 1971 film. But it will be interesting because, of course, in the book and in the film, Willy Wonka is a recluse and he's actually quite mean and he uses his chocolate to teach naughty kids a lesson and all these sort of things. So it'll be interesting to see if they do a series of these movies that builds up to that particular character arc. because Willy Wonka in this film is just a lovely, big-hearted guy. So it will be interesting to see how he ends up the Gene Wilder version of Willy Wonka, if they decide to go there, which I don't think they will, to be honest, because it's like, well, that means something terrible will have to happen or something that he overreacts to.
Yeah, I mean, if in that case, it does suggest that the entire supporting cast from this movie is either absent or dead.
There is that as well, because this has lots of new characters in it. So just to quickly go through the characters, Timothy Chalamet, man of the moment, because he's going to be in Dune 2 in spring, is Wonka. Yeah, so he arrives in Gay Paris of, it did say the year, didn't it? Was it early 20th century?
I don't think it does say the year, not that I remember.
Oh, I might be confusing it with Doctor Who last night, which also opened in in the early 1900s. It's pre-World War II, it seems, and with dreams of starting up a chocolate shop, he quickly discovers that these dreams are going to be sabotaged by the three chocolatiers, played by Patterson Joseph as Slugworth, and Matt Lucas as Prodnose, and Matthew Bainton as Ficklegrubber. And in service to them is Keegan-Michael Key as the chief of police, who is kind of their bully boy who roughs up any newcomers. Wonka gets this little gang of misfits. So Carla Lane as Noodle is this little girl that acts as the superego to his id. She kind of brings him down to earth because his head is full of dreams. And we have Jim Carter, who is Abacus Crunch, which I thought was a great name. And who else is there? There's Rakhi Thakra as Lottie Bell. So this is the gang that he kind of gets together. And there was someone else, wasn't there? Oh, yeah, there was that.
The comedian,
yes.
Larry Chucklesworth, played by Rich Fulcher.
Yes. And this is directed by Paul King, written by him and Simon Farnaby. So they are the Paddington team. They also work with the Mighty Boosh a lot. This has a lot of people in it that you would recognise from sitcoms. If you live in Britain or if you like Britcoms, then you'll recognise a lot of people from things like Horrible Histories, Peep Show and things like that. We have Olivia Colman and Tom Davis, who play rather horrible hoteliers.
They basically play the Thénardiers from Les Mis.
Well, that was a reference I did not get.
You've seen the film Les Mis, right?
Yes, but I spend every day trying to forget it.
Yes, the Sacha Baron Cohen and Helena Bonham Carter characters from that.
Oh, yes.
Who run a kind of flop house, and, you know, although it's cheap to get in, you get charged for absolutely everything.
All right, yes, it is exactly that. So that's what they've done. So clearly the filmmakers were counting on the sheer banality of that movie adaptation of Les Mis, being that no one would remember that, which I didn't. Well, that worked on me.
And the fact that they didn't really market Wonka as a musical.
Yes, that's the thing I was going to say. Spoiler alert for Wonka, the promotional campaign for this film did an amazing job hiding the fact that this is a musical. It opens up with a song. How did you feel when that happened?
Oh, I mean, I knew it was a musical going in. I was worried when it opens because it's such a saccharine note straight from the off. And that scene is very Sweeney Todd. With him arriving on the boat in this new city. But it's exactly the tonal opposite of Sweeney Todd. And I was like, I'm sure this is going to be more tonally varied because at this point, this is just so, so saccharine. And then it goes, no, actually, that was, you know, that we're kind of setting that up in order to subvert that. And it goes, okay, good, thank God. This isn't going to be me sat here, like, you know, having my eyes bleed more than usual.
Yes, I was genuinely surprised when he started singing, and I thought, oh, yes, because, of course, the Willy Wonka film from 71 is a musical as well, and a couple of the songs in that film are teased and then actually happen in this film as well. But I was surprised when they started singing, and I thought, oh, okay, this is a musical then. Well, that was a conscious decision by the marketing department to not let anyone know that if you didn't do a bit more digging than the trailer.
I mean, yeah, I think Warner Brothers are very good at, you know, hiding this kind of thing. I mean, obviously, because Dune Part 2 is a musical.
Well, Warner's very, very good at hiding their films anyway, because they just sometimes never release them.
Yes, exactly.
So I suppose in this way, they kind of failed with this one because they released it and we all saw it. Wow, okay. So what did you think of Wonka?
I found it really charming. It was kind of, every, you know, what I was hoping it might be, given it comes from the team behind Paddington. Very inventive, very fun, heartfelt. This is very much, if you like Paddington, I'll imagine you'd like this. What did you think?
I thought this was the very definition of fine. This is a 3-star film right down the middle. I thought this was the equivalent of grabbing a handful of Quality Street, apart from the toffee pennies, which are an infernal creation, but grabbing a nice hand of chocolates from a tin of Quality Street, eating them, having a nice time while you did it. And then when it's over, you kind of forget you did it. This was a film that, well, one, I have to say, this was a film that is not aimed at me. And the screening I went to was Friday evening, Shaftesbury Avenue at the Odeon. There were families in the audience. It's a long film. It's just under 2 hours. The kids all seemed to enjoy it. You know, no one was saying they were bored or anything like that. The kids seemed to be into the story, particularly the relationship between Wonka and Noodle. And Noodle's this little girl who's an orphan and she's trying to find out what happened to her parents. That seemed to work very well for the kids. I thought it was a confection, and it's actually called a Paul King confection rather than a Paul King film at the beginning in the credits. And I thought, well, that's the perfect word for this. This is, it's kind of pretty to look at. It's nice, but I think it's not so much a soft center, more like a hollow center. I didn't find it charming, to be honest, and I didn't really think it had much genuine emotion to it. I thought it went through the motions of doing all of these things. It's a busy plot, but I thought there's no magic to this. Even though it is fun to watch. I mean, it's a good film for Christmas, it's all snowy, and I think the families will enjoy it. And it's a PG, and there's a couple of moments of darkness, but they are quickly resolved. But yeah, so it kind of happened. I thought, yep, that was literally fine. So yeah, so they were my takeaways.
I definitely enjoyed it more than you did. I found it swept me along quite nicely. I thought the songs were good, not great. It's by no means, I don't think, is good, but there was definitely a bit of a Mary Poppins Returns vibe, if only insofar as, oh, it's not shit, thank God.
Mm.
And also, yeah, like Mary Poppins Returns, they both have Cobner Holbrook-Smith, who in that is the good guy bank clerk, and in this he's the not corrupt officer.
Yeah, the deputy to Keegan-Michael Key's chief of police. I got a Mary Poppins Returns vibe from one of the songs early on, because the songs are good, and actually I thought that a couple of them were going to be great. Ultimately, they weren't. Are the lyrics done by the guy from The Divine Comedy?
I think they might be.
Right, because some of the lyrics were very fun and playful in their language, and Willy Wonka is kind of known for having playful linguistics, the way that he'll twist words and change them into slightly different sounding words and things like that. And some of the songs really captured that element, and I thought was good. But there weren't any songs that I thought, oh, this is actually has stayed the course and is a great song. They actually seemed quite short, which was, I think, quite good. Yes, it wasn't as good as Mary Poppins Returns, but it certainly wasn't a disaster.
It was also nice seeing Oxford, given that I was there just last month.
Oh, interesting, because the thing is that the film, it was so heavily treated in a CGI way that I actually thought pretty much everything was virtual. So virtual or augmented sets or behavior, things like that. I didn't actually think any of it was shot on a real location, but oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, they at one point they go under a bridge, and that's the Bridge of Sighs, and that's just around the corner from, you know, a big dramatic moment at the end of the film takes place outside the Radcliffe Camera.
Which is?
It's a circular building, pretty much quite near the middle of Oxford. It's a circular library.
Oh, okay, right, so that was a real building then. Oh, interesting. So what were the elements that you found charming about this, or why did its magic work on you?
I liked the linguistic stuff. As you say, they're quite Gene Wildian. Scratch that, reverse it. And yeah, I mean, a lot of the characters are kind of, they're very, you know, very much caricatures. They're very grotesque. I liked the energy of it. I thought the songs were decent. Yeah, I just got really carried along by it. And it helped that, you know, there were kids in the audience with us who were enjoying it without being disruptive.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah, that was the same in my one. Because it wasn't really, I mean, I was sitting at the front and, you know, most people were sitting towards the back. But I thought, well, this is a family film. You expect a family audience in a family film. But actually, everyone was very well behaved. Even the adults, which is not always the case either. Because I haven't seen the Paddington films, and everyone in the world loves the Paddington films. The point now where it's actually quite, I think, unconscious perversity on my part that I just haven't watched the Paddington films yet. Because everyone I know and whose opinion I respect just adores those movies. This did not make me want to watch the Paddington films.
The first Paddington film has one of my favourite jokes in anything.
Well, I can't wait to not watch it even more now, in that perverse way. This did not make me want to watch Paddington or the sequel. Not that I'm not going to watch them. It's just that I didn't. It's not like you see like a later film and think, I have to go back and find all of the previous work from this team. Yeah, that didn't happen. Yes, but Hugh Grant was, as he always is, very good value for money. It's an interesting career he's had with the posh supporting player in small films from the late 80s, early 90s. Ones that I think it was it Richard E. Grant in his diaries talks about working with Hugh Grant on a film in the early 90s. And it's pretty much just a tax dodge film, I think. So they're just making a film so someone doesn't have to pay their taxes. And Richard Lee Grant's sort of trying to get enthusiastic about it. And Hugh Grant said, no, this is just Euro shit. We're just doing Euro shit now. But then, of course, he strikes big with Four Weddings, becomes this huge star, this romantic leading man, even survives a sex scandal, and then kind of seems to get just really bored with it and kind of reinvents himself with Bridget Jones as a bit of a cad, and now just does things, I think, that just kind of tickle his fancy, like... Well, he's worked with Guy Ritchie a couple of times recently, which is a bit of a shame, but he has elevated those movies just by dint of being in them. And then here he turns up as an Oompa Loompa and is just very funny and the entire audience loved him.
Yeah, and that's the thing. And also playing the Oompa Loompa in this, he's very sardonic and slightly bored seeming, which, you know, he also is in Dungeons and Dragons.
Yes.
So he's like, I'll be in your film, but I have to be allowed to play it contemptuously.
That's the thing, is that it's like he's sardonic and bored seeming in interviews as well. So it just seems to be almost like he is the quirky British Jack Nicholson. If you want Jack, you get Jack. If you want Hugh, you're going to get this. It's like, well, yeah, if that's used well in a film, it can be a delight to watch. Because, yes, of course, he was in Dungeons and Dragons, a film which I thought worked much better in terms of charm and magic than this one. And a lot of the enjoyment of that film came from him because he was quite the cad. He has one of the great lines of that film. I'm sorry, I can't stand here and watch you die. So I'm going to go to the next room.
Not to tease it too much, but could Dungeons & Dragons be a top 10 candidate for you?
It is a candidate, but who knows if it's going to be in there. We will have to see. So anything else about Wonka?
No, not really. As you say, it was a confection. I enjoyed it. It's not going to be a top 10 contender.
No. No, I think it'll make money. It's a crowd pleaser. Everyone seemed to really enjoy it as they walked out. I didn't stay around for the very end of the credits, did you? Because there is something that happens very early on into the credits and is very funny. And actually, I thought was quite clever in terms of how it wound up some of the story. But yeah, to be honest, I couldn't be asked to wait for the very end of the credits to roll to see if there was anything at the end. So did you stick around?
I did not, so I clearly missed the post-credit scene, which is the team up with Paddington and...
Yes, indeed, we're...
And Rupert the Bear, and...
They're starting an initiative.
Yes, the Nostalgia Initiative.
The Nostalgia Initiative. Well, I think that's an initiative that's been going on for a while, but yes,
that's just the MCU.
This is the reboot. That's right. This is the reboot of the Nostalgia Initiative. We'll just very, very quickly talk about the performances. Yeah, so Chalamet can do this stuff. I mean, I think he's a movie studio's dream. He's very handsome, but non-threatening. He's kind of this generation's Johnny Depp. And Johnny Depp, of course, played Willy Wonka in the Tim Burton film from 2005. But Johnny Depp always had an air of sexual charisma to him. And maybe because I'm just so old now and straight, that doesn't seem to be coming through. But I just look at Timothy Chalamet and think, I don't get that same kind of danger that Johnny Depp would bring to his roles. So I think that you're a movie studio's dream. You are incredibly handsome. Very, very dashing, actually. You can look like an older sort of movie star, but you are quite androgynous and non-threatening, which makes you perfect for the lead in a big family Christmas film.
Yeah, for example, he did not make the decision to play this as Michael Jackson, though, unlike Johnny Depp in the 2005 version.
Oh, is that what he did? Was that where he took his cue from?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
But did you like Chalamet?
I like Chalamet, yeah, exactly. Not to fall back on the same word, he's charming, and he can sing, and he can dance. He is a very versatile actor.
Hmm.
Well, within a certain range.
Yeah. Very versatile within a certain range. That is, that is Spinal Tap manager. When it's like, would you say that their audience has gotten smaller? No. I say their audience has gotten more selective.
Sorry, I don't know if this is going to make the episode, but the scene with one of the early scenes with Scrubbit and Bleacher, I do have a note that just says they're going to bugger him.
Yes, indeed. So, of course, that's Olivia Colman and Tom Davis. Actually, yes, there is an element of sexual threat, which is not intended, when Wonka first arrives at the hotel. And yes, it does seem, because he has to sign a contract that has lots and lots and lots of small print. And it does seem as if one of them is, I agree to Gimp Tuesdays.
it's like, oh no. He's like,
you signed the contract, love, Gimp Tuesdays. So go on, get your mask on, do up the zip over the mouth. Again, a Wonka episode this is on, guys. I mean, Jesus. Okay, so just to quickly finish off the actors that I liked in the film. And everyone was good in the film. They all gave, like, spirited performances. They all understood the tone of the film. No one was going for big moments of drama, which I actually think is a bit of a shame, because it's like, because there were moments, there were some moments that were supposed to land as very moving, and it didn't. It just seemed like they just had to tick off that particular plot point. But I don't know, I'll always go to Patterson Joseph for just that wonderful, wonderful comic persona that he created, which is in Peep Show. So Johnson, the kind of the business guru, the self-styled business guru from Peep Show, just works so well for him, I think, that he, you could say, uncharitably does that in every single film. But again, it's like, well, it's like Hugh Grant. If he's going to do that, then, well, that's good. If you give him the right role, he is great. And Patterson Joseph, I thought, as Slugworth, I just loved it when he was on screen, because he just made me laugh so much. There's a nice little touch with one of the other characters where, because they're so evil and rich, whenever he hears the word poor, he gags. And that did make me laugh as well.
That's the Matthew Bainton character.
Yes, that's right, yeah. Yeah, so the baddies were good, I thought, in a proper pantomime way. Any other standout performances for you, or any other moments that you thought were good?
It was good seeing Keegan-Michael Key.
Mm. Oh, is it a spoiler to say what happens to him over the course of the film?
I don't think it's in the trailer.
Oh, is it? Oh, okay, what? That he gets fat?
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. Well, I saw that trailer a lot and didn't remember it. But it worked, and I knew there was a Wonka film coming out, I suppose. Yeah, it was interesting that, because I thought, well, you are going to have to address the fact at some point that if you eat a lot of chocolate, it's not healthy for you, which they did. And yeah, I thought that was quite good, because it's like, in these sensitive times we live in, it could be seen as body shaming. There is actually a reference to body shaming in one of the songs. And I thought, no, that is good that you did that. It's weird that seems brave to do that, to say eating a lot of chocolate is not good for you. But they are the weird times we live in.
Rowan Atkinson?
Oh, yes, Rowan Atkinson, of course. Yeah, that was one of the more interesting parts of the film, is that he plays a Catholic cleric who, yeah, is maybe not always on the side of the angels. And I thought, well, that's interesting. Again, in this film...
We're going to skip the obvious joke here.
Yeah. Well, I've got a very, very dark, obvious joke in my mind, but is that where you're going?
Yes, just in terms of, unlike every other Catholic priest.
Yeah, indeed, yeah.
This is his first film in, like, 5 years.
Well, yeah, because he's quite old now, isn't he? I mean, he must be late 60s, early 70s. Yeah, so there was a weird kind of, not anti-religion, but it was a film that was distrustful of the institution of the church. And I thought, oh, that's interesting as well, because you could see that annoying some people. And of course, yeah, studios now just want to make everything, particularly their big family film, as anodyne as possible. Yeah, that was an interesting touch. I think one of the things is that chocolate is no longer a magic thing. And of course, the book was written in 64, but chocolate was still, particularly for kids, was still a luxury at that point. I mean, yeah, the war is definitely really within recent memory. And I think the rationing ended in the 50s, so there would be that memory of going without, particularly around chocolate.
Well, did you read Boy, right?
No, I don't think I did, actually.
Because Roald Dahl, when he was at boarding school, I think it was when he was at boarding school, used to receive, as did his fellow classmates, like basically taster boxes from Cadbury's, who like wanted them to give feedback on the different chocolates.
Oh, that's right. Yes, I'd heard that story. I've not just read the book, but I heard that story. And at that time, that would have been like every kid's dream come true, that you're getting lots and lots of free chocolate.
And that the grown-ups want your opinion on it.
Well, yeah, indeed, yeah. And it's like, and that you are, there is a tacit approval that you have to eat this. Can you imagine now saying to the kids, you have to eat all this chocolate?
Yes, yes. If you don't eat your chocolate, you won't get your greens.
That's right, yes. But I really want my broccoli, but not my chocolate. And even in the 80s, chocolate still had a bit of magic to it. And I don't know, I just don't think that chocolate maybe does. Maybe it does for kids. And that's the thing, I'm just, I just don't notice it anymore.
I bought a bag of Revels when I went in to see Wonka, because I knew that watching it was probably going to make me want chocolate, and that was quite enjoyable.
Right. I bought a cup of tea thinking I'm just not in the mood for chocolate. I mean, maybe kids do like it, but it just seems as if chocolate is so easy to get now, and it's everywhere, that it doesn't quite have that magic that it would have done, in the 80s, but definitely within the 60s and 70s, when that would be the big treat of the week. So the fact that it's chocolate, I think it kind of got around the fact that it's like, well, chocolate's not good for you. And all this eating of chocolate and all these kids eating chocolate, that could be sending out a weird message. But I think it actually got around that, just in terms of there is something here that is, that is quite magical. Because as in the book, the chocolate has magical properties.
Yes, yeah, in this the chocolate is literally magical, not always with the effect that you might that might be desired. I actually haven't opened my advent calendar yet, shamefully, so I've got like a week's worth of advent calendar chocolates to eat. Probably do that now.
So my friend got me a present that was an amazing present, and you definitely have seen it. It's an advent calendar, but it's a model of the Nakatomi building, and there's a little Hans Gruber that falls down, and it kind of counts down from 1 to 24, and you just move him down every day, so his arm is pointing at whatever day it is. And that's my advent calendar this year, and next year, and for the rest of my days, because it's just so brilliant.
Yeah, I've seen that advertised. That's quite good fun, if slightly grim.
But it's Hans Gruber, is fine.
On the 25th of December, Hans Gruber impacts on the pavement. Right. Hans Gruber turns into a water balloon filled with ragu.
At which point I say, oh, I hope that wasn't one of the hostages. Again, in a Wonka thing. It's fine. Regular listeners to the show know the tone. Yes, okay then. Well, shall we wrap it up there?
Yes, that seems like a good place to end it.
A nice place to land it.
So, Mr. Daniel, thank you. If our listeners are looking for you online, where can they find you?
Well, actually, you can find me in lots of different places, even though I'm not on Twitter. Yes, if you want to find me on Letterboxd, you can do that at letterboxd.com/robdan, see what I've been watching and what I've been thinking of it. You can find me on Instagram at instagram.com/robdan75. You can find my writing at electric-shadows.com. Yes, so that's where you can find me on those things. But if you like the film Highlander, and you also like conversations that go on to lots of different sorts of topics, some of them as kind of weird and transgressive as what we've talked about on this Wonka episode, then I heartily recommend that you go over and listen to another podcast that we've done called Another Time MacLeod, in which we go through that wonderful 1986 movie Highlander, scene by glorious scene, with lots of ace guests who talk about why they love Highlander. And yeah, it's the entire movie done as a podcast. We talk about Highlander some of the time. We also talk about many, many different things on that podcast. I think it's quite good fun, I would say that. But yes, so that's something else that Rob and I have done, and you can hear that wherever you're listening to this.
And yeah, if you're looking for me online, I'm also not on Twitter, but you can find me on Letterboxd at Robert M. Wallace. You can also find my writing, such as it is, at Of All The Film Sites, www.ofallthefilmsites.com. And if you've enjoyed listening to this, I believe this podcast is still on Twitter, at Movie Robcast. We're also on Instagram, at The Movie Robcast. And if you want to drop us an email, you can do so at movierobcast@gmail.com. If you have enjoyed, please do rate and review. It's lovely to get the feedback, and it does give us a little boost in the algorithm.
Cool. Excellent.
Mr. Daniel, for what will most likely be the penultimate time this year, thank you very much.
And thank you very much.
And thank you very much for listening, and we'll be with you pretty soon for our end of year roundup.
Woohoo!
Whee!
So you're the funny little man who's been following me.
I will have you know that I am a perfectly respectable size for an Oompa Loompa.
An Oompa what now?
Allow me to refresh your memory.
Oh, I don't think I want to hear that.
Too late. I've started dancing now. Once we've started, we can't stop.